The Dolo White Podcast is brought to you by Cinema Anywhere Nashville. Follow Cinema Anywhere Nashville on Instagram and book your indoor or outdoor cinema experience today. Hey, it's Dolo White, and this is the Dolo White Podcast. Marriage is what brings us here today, and let's be honest, the blissful picture that the media creates of love and marriage is bullshit. In most love stories, the story ends with a couple getting together and living happily ever after, except that's not reality. Reality is that's when the real shit starts. The mere concept of marriage is a little crazy to begin with, that two relatively young people find each other and commit to loving one another for the remainder of their lives, disregarding the fact that they're both going to change as human beings and possibly grow in different directions. That's fucking insane. And I'm saying that as a married person who loves the shit out of my wife. She's a fucking goddess, but that's not the point. The point is, this shit is hard. My guest today is Matthew Frey, a marriage coach and author of the new book, This Is How Your Marriage Ends. So if you're married, turn this up. And if you're single, turn this shit all the way the fuck up, because we need to be having more realistic conversations surrounding marriage. And that's exactly what we're doing today. Welcome to the Dolo White Podcast.
Polo Gini. Live. Yeah. What's up?
This is not live. It's completely recorded.
Broadcasting from one of the top recording studios in all of Nashville, Tennessee.
Yeah, that's not true at all. I'm probably at home doing this.
He's been called one of the greatest thinkers of his time.
Literally no one has ever called me that. I do kind of agree with it, though.
Right here. A 2017 recipient of the Nobel Peace Prize.
That's just a flat-out lie.
Talking politics, community, race, religion, entertainment, sports, and whatever the fuck else. Yeah. It's the Dolo White Podcast.
Episode 69 now of the Dolo White Podcast. My guest today, author of This Is How Your Marriage Ends, Matthew Frey. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
I started your book. I haven't got a chance to finish it yet. I'm married. It'll be 7 years for me in June. I should know that, obviously. I think it's, from what I've read so far, it's a book that no matter how happy you think your marriage is, you should definitely read it, because you're going to get something out of it, right?
I appreciate that. I like to let people have whatever opinions about it they have. I'm not trying to like say this is some relationship Bible and everybody should read it. It's the book that would have helped me not accidentally, I think, like mess up my marriage. And so to me, that's the value it provides. And so, yes, people in good relationships, I think, could potentially benefit from it. I think realistically, nobody's going to be motivated to do it. But if they're frustrated by things that are going on and they don't know how to explain it, I think there's a chance some of those insights might live in those pages. If they're just a guy, well, anybody, but often a guy who means well and is never trying to like hurt his wife. And it doesn't have to just be marriage, his wife, his girlfriend, whoever. This applies to lots of relationships, frankly. And he's like, I don't get it, though. Like, it just seems like she's always finding something new to complain about. I think there's like insights to be pulled from it that were, in my estimation, hard earned being that I regret that I don't have my marriage and family anymore.
I read something on the prep sheet here that really stuck out to me. It says, sometimes the assumption that we are acting on good intentions that causes us to alienate our partners and ferment trust. Can you elaborate on that?
I believed myself to be a good person. The story I tell in the book is that I believe my grandmother to have impeccable character. I say something like, she's the kindest, sweetest human who's ever lived. And anybody says different, a dirty liar, possibly just someone who's never met her before. Then I go on to make the point that despite her impeccable character, you wouldn't hire her to be like the general contractor to construct a skyscraper. Or a bridge, or to drive a race car, or pilot an airplane, or fix your watch, or whatever. My grandma's a great person, but she doesn't know how to do those things at all. Right. So the idea that her quality character somehow should result in her being skilled or knowledgeable about something is ludicrous. Yet, so many of us bring that same like mindset to our relationship. I'm a good person. I'm never trying to hurt anybody. And then we make the excuse that no one should be hurt because we're not trying to cause harm. And it's just really self-serving. I don't know if I'm allowed to say bad words.
Yeah, go for it.
It's bullshit. Yeah. It's incredibly selfish, self-centered bullshit to say, if I mean well and I'm not trying to hurt others, someone else's pain is their responsibility and not mine. And I spent my entire life doing that until my marriage ended, and probably a year or so after. And then I slowly started to like figure it out, that the real work of earning the trust and the respect of another person, and for them to decide that I'm worth having in their life, requires me to give a shit about how they experience the things that I do and say. And we can apply that right across the board.
Absolutely.
To people who live different lives than us and don't have the same experiences we have. And you're going to be able to think of tons of examples in modern socio-political terms where a bunch of people like to act like someone else shouldn't feel whatever it is that they feel or say whatever they say, just because they don't have that same experience. And I very quickly learned how to not do that because of this whole like marriage journey I've been on.
So was it the divorce for you that kind of the light switch that went off and said, yeah.
Yes, sir. Yeah. Absolutely. I was a threat to be the guy that never accepted responsibility, how other people experienced me across the board. But the one that really hurt was my wife choosing to leave and then only having my son home half the time because he's cool and I liked him. So I still do. He's 13 now and he's here half the time. No, he's great. Like, anyway, everything's fine today. But I thought the world was ending 9 years ago.
What do you think when people get, I'm going to give you my answer to my own question and then I want you to answer. What do you think the biggest misconception is when people get married? And I think it's that you're marrying somebody who's not going to evolve or not going to change in any way. And I got married when I was, I think 36, 37. So later than a lot of people, right? I wasn't getting married young. And I remember even thinking then, like, well, we're in our 30s. We're going to be the same people. And here we are in our 40s and we are completely different people than we were in our 30s. And I just remind myself of how stupid a fucking thought that was when I got married. But what do you think what is the biggest misconception about marriage in your opinion?
It's that, but you said it more intelligently, maturely, and more wisely than I would have. The way I even wrote it in the book was like forever boyfriend, forever girlfriend. Like, we're dating. Everything's fine. If we get married, it's just going to be this continuation of right now.
Yeah.
It's how I thought about it. But you said it in a nuanced, intelligent way that nobody was going to like evolve or grow or change in any meaningful way. And I don't want to like make excuses for myself, but we were 24 when we got engaged, 25 when we got married, 29 when our son was born. And that doesn't mean I'm not responsible for all of the shortcomings in my relationship. But I wonder, had I had more years to grow and learn some of these like lessons the hard way, do I bring a better version of myself to my marriage? I'd like to think so. But the truth is, I believe I needed to suffer to learn how to like care about how someone else experiences me.
Wow. So this book is very open. You're very open about everything. I know you had a blog. One of your first blogs that went viral I'm a shitty husband. I didn't do the dishes. Is that?
Well, the first one that kind of got popular was an open letter to shitty husbands, but I was the first to raise my hand and say, this is me. This isn't, I'm not calling you guys shitty husbands. I'm saying I'm a shitty husband. And I believe these characteristics or behaviors might result in you being one. The lesson being, it doesn't matter if you're an awesome human being, you can still be bad at the role of being like a romantic partner or spouse. Just like my grandma can be awful at all these other things, despite being a really great person. And then yes, in January, 2016, I wrote a post called "She Divorced Me Because I Left Dishes by the Sink." And that was the first time a critical mass of humans paid attention to me, because that thing was like super popular. It was like millions and millions of readers on my blog, but like even more in other places, like bigger websites like Huffington Post and Your Tango and the Good Men Project. You know, they were getting significantly more views than even I was. And I got like 4.5 million on it, which is insane.
Yeah.
For being just like a guy on a WordPress blog that nobody should care about. But that elevated me to like a new level. And then you may or may not be aware, but in January 2020, the New York Times reached out to me. They found out I was some idiot divorced guy writing on the internet and coaching people. And I think that intrigued them. They wrote a feature story about it. It's on the wall behind me. So. And that changed the world. I had within a couple of weeks, I had agents, offers to like create unscripted TV shows, and then the book contract that allows me to do this full time now. And I'm extraordinarily grateful for it. But it's like, I hate how it's like, I had to be a trash husband in my estimation. I might be being like a tiny bit hard on myself because I didn't know how like bad I was. But I had to be a bad husband. I had to make like my wife suffer in these like subtle ways. I had to go through divorce in order. I had to put my son through 50-50 co-parenting things since he was 4 for the last 9 years in order for like this opportunity to present itself. And so I almost feel like I'm profiting on like the sins of my past, if you will.
Yeah.
Is almost how it feels a little bit. But I sleep at night because I really, really, truly, and long before anybody gave me any money for it, I was trying to live the redemption story. I was trying to like help people. I mean, it can be found in writings from 14 and 15 and 16. I, I really do care about this. This is like a personal thing for me.
From the people that you coach, what is the biggest mistake that you see married couples make?
I think there's two and they're equal, but like one precipitates the other. So the first one is this idea, and forgive me because the words are going to make people's eyes glaze over, but like stick with me for a second, please. The first one is consideration. And I don't mean like when somebody says you're not considerate, even though ironically, like it lives in the same like world. What we don't do, here's what like wives and mothers say to me. I wake up every day and I think about me. I think about my husband. I think about my children. And this, it doesn't always have to be marriage. I wake up, I think about me. I think about my romantic partner. And there's no decision I make in the course of a day where I don't calculate for how they might experience it. Like I always think if I do this, like what'll happen to them? Is it fine? And I consider whether like scheduling a hair appointment at 7:30 at night is going to make it difficult for my husband and my children to like do whatever, have dinner, get to their extracurriculars, all these things. It's just like a default setting for a lot of wives and a lot of mothers in relationships. Flip that. And they're like, I'm married to a guy that doesn't do that. I'm married to a guy where it's evident he's the only variable in the math equation he uses to make the decision. He's the only person he was thinking about. It doesn't make him a bad guy. He definitely wasn't trying to hurt anybody. He loves us. We know that. It's not about that. But it's like he just failed to calculate for how we'll like experience this decision he went off to make on his own without like asking us or thinking about us at all. And so what happens is when you're a person who does that to someone else, they're left to think these two ideas. Either I'm in a relationship with somebody who considers me, thinks about me all the time, and he does things that hurt me intentionally or negligently all the time. Like that's the worst case scenario.
Right.
But the best case scenario is I'm in a relationship with somebody who doesn't think about me at all. I'm in a relationship with somebody who doesn't even remember that I'm like a person that will be impacted by choices he makes or things he does or doesn't do. And the absence of consideration as like a mindful practice every day totally erodes safety and trust in relationships. So that to me is like the foundational habit people need to have. But where it really gets like scary is the conversation that happens afterwards. So some isolated incident, like I leave a dish by the sink, or I at work late, I don't text my wife, and then I make her late for this thing that she told me she had to do 2 days ago, but I forgot about. And I didn't communicate I was going to be late. And so it was all about me, right? I didn't try to hurt her. I wasn't trying to cause any harm. But what people experience in those situations is pretty rough. The average person, and I'm, well, let's make it about me. My wife would say, hey, Matt, this thing happened and it felt bad. And there's three ways I might respond to her. The first way is to disagree that the thing happened that she said just happened. Well, yeah, it didn't happen. This is what happened. So her feelings are like invalid because it's based on something that didn't even happen in the first place. Version two, Matt, bad thing happened. I feel bad about it. And this time I'm like, yes, that's exactly what happened. But why are you making such a big deal out of it? Like, why are you overreacting to that? That's insane to me. Version three, wife comes in and says, Matt, you did something. It sucked for me. I feel bad. This is me telling you about it. And I defend myself. I explain myself. I justify my actions. I try to explain to her like what I was thinking and what I was trying to do. And then believing afterwards, she won't be angry and she won't feel bad anymore afterward. But what that is, if we're going to think about it in math terms, and I like to, because I don't think this is about intention. I don't think this is about character. I think this is about what the math result of our actions are experienced by someone else, like how they are. And so what my wife learned over the course of a 12-year relationship with me was if she came to me to report that there was a problem she was having and I didn't agree that she's that it was as big of a deal as she was making it out to be, that she should feel the way she felt, or that regardless, I was going to do what I wanted to do anyway because I thought it was so defensible and justifiable. She learned that if I don't agree with her, I'll always choose my beliefs and my feelings over hers every time, forever. And so after that happens 1,000 times, she thinks this is going to happen for the rest of my life. Every time I feel bad and I tell him, if he doesn't agree that I should feel bad, he's going to communicate he doesn't think I should feel bad, imply that I'm stupid or crazy, that I'm weak, that I'm hypersensitive, and that he doesn't bear any responsibility for any of this. And he more or less is implying he'll do it again tomorrow, next week, next month, and next year. Those are the people that lose trust in us. And I think a healthy person should leave. I don't want to advocate divorce, certainly. Right. I don't. I don't want to say should. It makes sense to me that a healthy person would make the decision to leave that situation. And so 9 years ago, I blamed my wife for quitting on our marriage. And today, I say, I'm so glad she had the self-respect and decency to recognize that I was never going to stop doing what I was doing. And she made a different choice and she healed me, so to speak. I don't know if everybody would have the same experience, but I needed to make sure I didn't find myself in a future relationship where the same thing was going to happen. And in that work of trying to protect my future self from like feeling that same thing following divorce, I discovered what I believe are some really key insights into how we accidentally erode trust in our relationships. We do that enough times, people leave.
How much of a factor do you think, especially with men's behavior, is like patriarchy? Because it feels like marriages are set up for men for the most part, just traditionally. We judge a woman. I don't judge a woman, but society can judge women on, oh, she can't keep a man. That's why she's still single. But for men, we don't have those things. If we're single at 40, it's like, oh, he's having a good time. He's single. He's enjoying himself. But if a woman is single at 40, she's being judged. It always seems like it's a woman's place to do a lot of the work in the relationship to keep it going, where it's a man's place to just go out, work, do what he wants to do. Yes. Traditionally, anyway, I realize not every relationship is like that, but how much of a role does that play in a man's mindset when he's entering into a relationship?
I honestly don't know the degree to which it's even thought about. I think it's this like sort of like blind. I've been bringing up the word privilege. It's like a trigger word today that like people don't like. I don't think men like hearing male privilege. I don't think white people like hearing white privilege. But the way that I think about it is this. I'm privileged that I was, at least. I never experienced anything like that before. I didn't have to be responsible for like holding a relationship together, for doing all of the like childcare and being like, if I don't think when we wake up on Saturday morning, okay, listen, I know cleaning sucks, but we've got to like cooperate to like clean this place. Otherwise, it's going to be gross and, you know, it's going to be bad. And I think I had a higher tolerance for disheveledness and disorganization than my wife, certainly. But she was responsible for like everything. That was like the adult work. She really was. And I thought it was a difference of preferences. I thought, I want to watch SportsCenter on Saturday. I don't want to, after working all week, I don't want to get up and like have chores to do. I feel like I'm like 14 again and it sucks. And I would act like that, like a petulant child sort of, but not quite that bad, but close. Probably for her, she'd probably say petulant child. And I mean, it would really frustrate her, I think, because she learned that nothing would ever happen if she didn't accept responsibility for like managing it. And it's just a really rough place to put somebody. So yeah, I think that is sort of like this patriarchal thing. I mean, I sort of call it half jokingly accidental sexism. What I mean by that is I think there's a lot of guys, if they're like me, that think of the concept of sexism as this like desire to have power over women, that I'm male, I'm better and entitled to things that women, you know, women are worse or weaker or less than, and they're not entitled to these things I'm entitled to. I think a lot of guys in their relationships don't think like that. I'm not trying to dominate or like win a battle of the sexes with my relationship partner or with women in general. And so they think I'm not sexist. But then it's like, we have these beliefs about what makes men men, what makes women women, and does communicating vulnerably and authentically in a relationship, does that feel like a masculine activity or an effeminate activity? And I was guilty of believing 10 years ago that that was like an effeminate, talking about your feelings was some real like effeminate weak shit, is how I thought about it. And I didn't do it. I didn't want to. I thought it was stupid. And I didn't understand that it really wasn't about masculine, feminine. It was about, these are the ingredients necessary for relationships to be healthy and have the requisite amount of trust in them. And if we're going to like opt out of it because we think it's like some girly thing to do and we think being girly is bad, I think a lot of men are going to suffer, even though it's like, I don't want them to, because they're not bad guys. They just don't realize that not participating in some of these things relationally will result in harm for them down the road.
My last question, I'll let you out of here. I know you got to scoot. I hear two things that a lot of people make relationships about, or they say that marriages end because of these two reasons. I know one of them is money, and then there's always a sex issue as well. Is that, do you get that a lot as a coach?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, absolutely. There's two things that happen, and I'd like to talk about both of them.
Go for it.
Please. I think not the money thing necessarily, because I think that's super obvious to people. Yeah. I hope, but I think the sex thing can be a little non-obvious to people. I think that particularly if something like, you know, there's often like pornography use, there's often this belief that's like, I don't cheat on you, therefore I'm good, in the context of the sex conversation within marriage. And what happens, I think, to a lot of guys is they'll turn to pornography use. I mean, I think that's just certainly a big one or whatever. And men will stop signaling to their relationship partner that you are desired, that you are desirable, that you are worthy of me, like pursuing that, that, you know, I'm not communicating that you're beautiful, that I want you, that all these things that sort of like organically happened, like in the dating period. And they just kind of die like on the vine in marriage. And I don't want to like pick on anybody about it. I think it's natural. I even talk about this notion of hedonic adaptation in the book, this idea that whenever we're faced with something like day in and day out, we sort of become numb to it. We sort of like take it for granted, even if we love it, even if it's our son, even if it's the use of our arms and legs, our ability to breathe, our ability to see. Like, I mean, how many times in the last like week did you think, man, I'm so grateful I can breathe. Like, I'm so grateful I can see. Like, we don't even think about it, but it's one of the best things in life is that we can breathe and see. It's really cool. We love our wives. We love our children. But in the busyness of all the time, we like sort of like forget to just mindfully communicate that idea. And I just think a lot of intimacy and a lot of trust issues die. But when that stuff starts to happen, and when like our wives start to get a little bit angry and a little bit resentful that we're not contributing meaningfully to like childcare and like shared domestic responsibility, the whole like she feels like your mom and doesn't want to sleep with you thing starts to rear its head. It's really awful. I think a lot of people struggle in like the sexual arena because they're too afraid to talk about what they really think and feel, A, or B, they don't know how to connect. I don't show up for my wife and contribute to like caring for children in all these little ways. You know, she's scheduling every doctor's appointment and she's feeding the baby and she's making sure like our 6-year-old has his lunch packed and, you know, clothes washed for school. She's doing that stuff all of the time. She doesn't need me at all for any of it. And I think that's fine. And I'm just going to comfortably opt out of the process. But half the time she thinks, my God, like I do all of this. My husband is just like another one of my kids. And then this like parent-child relationship almost, I think, develops, and it destroys like trust and intimacy and sexual desire. And then a guy feeling like shunned by his wife will turn to pornography or, God forbid, like some other thing, like somebody at work or who knows what. And then like really bad things can happen. And it's like both people have very honest, very understandable, in my estimation, feelings of being rejected by the other. But it's this like failure to be brave enough to talk about it along the way that prevents all the poison from setting in. I don't know. I wasn't very brave in my relationship to talk about sex stuff with my wife.
That was an amazing answer. The book is This Is How Your Marriage Ends. Matthew Frey, thank you so much for doing this, man. I've really enjoyed our time together.
Awesome to meet you. If there's ever a next time, I'll look forward to it. Thank you for the opportunity.
Absolutely. It can definitely be a next time, man. I could talk to you for hours, man. Thank you.
Yes, sir.
All right. This episode of the podcast is brought to you by Cinema Anywhere Nashville. You can book your indoor or outdoor cinema experience right now, starting at only $350. Cinema Anywhere Nashville provides your choice of a 16, 24, 36, or even 100-foot screen, plus projector setup and sound system. This is a super dope service that wouldn't just be great for corporate and work events, but also birthday and holiday parties, or if you want to have a romantic evening with your significant other. Cinema Anywhere Nashville is perfect for all of those things. They have the right experience for you. Follow them on Instagram right now at Cinema Anywhere Nashville and book your cinema experience today. I want to say thank you once again to my guest, Matthew Frey. Whether you're married or not, his book, This Is How Your Marriage Ends, is a must read. Check that out as soon as possible. All right. Make sure you're following me on all platforms, Instagram, Twitter, TikTok, Clubhouse, everything. At DolaWhite101, DoleWhite101. Also, no matter what platform you're currently listening to this podcast on right now, make sure you hit that subscribe or follow button. That way you get notifications when new episodes drop. And speaking of new episodes, brand new episode drops next Wednesday. My guest will be poet James Cruz talking about the path to kindness. Definitely check that out. Don't forget, if the platform you're listening to this on lets you rate and review, do just that, but only if you have nice things to say and only if you're going to give me a high rating. Otherwise, you can keep that shit to yourself. All right? Until next week, I'm gone. Thank you for checking out the podcast.